Hello and welcome to the Event Industry News podcast. This podcast is kindly sponsored by Visit by GES, our smart event solution partner. For more information on Visit by GES and its smart event solutions, head over to visit.ges.com. So a very good morning, afternoon or evening to our podcast watchers and listeners, wherever or whenever you may be tuning in from. Don't forget to stay up to date with all of the latest content from eventindustrynews.com by downloading the Event Industry News app, which is available for all the major mobile devices. You can also get your opinions to us using Twitter via @eventnewsblog. So, on to our guests for today. First of all, we welcome Alison Megyar, CEO of Hub. Alison, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
And we've got Laura Lopez. Laura is the Senior Community Manager for Social Tables. Laura, very good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm hoping that I can safely say that both of our guests are joining us from far afield, because our more sharp listeners or watchers will notice that there are accents involved in today's podcast. Ladies, whereabouts are you joining us from today?
I'm joining from the Portland, Oregon area.
That's a good morning for you.
It is, yeah.
And then I'm joining from Washington, D.C.
Excellent. So just about afternoon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, today our guests have joined us to look at a subject I suppose we're loosely calling Task Manager versus Strategic Planner and job roles within the events industry. And the best way to look at and introduce today's subject, I suppose, is to hand it over to both of our guests. I don't know whether Laura or Alison, which one of you would like to kick us off, but when we look at task manager versus strategic planner, so the difference between somebody who is perhaps planning in advance and then somebody who is executing the actual objectives on an event, are they two different job roles? Is it one and the same now, and what are the differences between them?
I definitely think that they're two different roles, but I think where we stand in the industry is that planners want to be taken more seriously, and they want to be seen as strategic, having a strategic role in their organization, whereas people used to think that they were just taskmasters or the folks who would handle logistics for an event. And mm-hmm. I think because there's so much money poured into events to really help achieve the organization's objectives, they want to be taken more seriously as it's more of a strategy role. So I think they're two separate things.
And Alison, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I have a little bit of a background. I've been a corporate meeting planner for the last 15 years prior to my role inside of Hub. So I planned and managed some of the world's largest technology conferences. So I agree with Laura in that it is incredibly important to understand the goals and objectives of what you're trying to achieve and to bring that strategy level into your day-to-day, because otherwise, as a taskmaster, that means you just get buried underneath the thousands of things that need to happen. But the problem is if you don't have the strategy level there and you don't have the goals and objectives in mind, you can't prioritize what work needs to happen and what work needs to happen first or with more care and time. And so you just end up crossing off boxes off your checklist, but not really accomplishing as much as you potentially could when it comes to events as a part of the marketing portfolio.
So fundamentally, you both appear to share the same opinion then on the differentiation between these job roles. Many event organizers, though, will be very, very hands-on, that they have a very, very sometimes stubborn-mindedness about them, that they know how to deliver things best and they want to be really involved in everything. It sounds like that some of them either need to take a step back or have somebody else doing a slightly different role in order for them to achieve the strategic side of the business. Would it be fair to say that there are a lot of people that you've come across in your professional careers that have that sort of stubborn-mindedness and wanting to do everything themselves, which leaves them open to not being able to achieve some of the strategic side of the business?
I think it comes down to time, ultimately. And I think meeting planners are used to doing things a certain way, and they want to get them done as fast as possible. And so sometimes that actually gets us stuck in a rut of just doing things the same way because we think it's the fastest. And if meeting planners had more time in their day, and we can talk a little bit later about how they can get more time in their day, but if they had more time in their day, I think all of them would much rather be able to take a step back and be able to prioritize, think of how it integrates with the overall strategy instead of just churning and burning thousands of tasks. Because ultimately, I found when I was just doing churn and burn type work, half the work didn't really matter in the end anyways, because decisions hadn't been made at the right level, or the time frame ended up completely changing or because of the goals and objectives. So I feel like if we only focus on the tasks and the way that we used to do things, we aren't open to additional ways of saving time and giving ourselves the brain space to actually be strategic about what we're doing.
Well, let's not wait for that and bring it up later. How do people get more time in their day? Because this is a subject that will affect people in any walk of life and in any business.
If I could jump in there, I mean, I would say it. So I work for a technology company. Our bread and butter is venue sourcing and event diagramming and attendee management. So, you know, in essence, our company was born out of wanting to give planners time back in their day, with not being buried with those churn and burn tasks that are repetitive and, you know, that are very predictable. So I think that one of the easiest ways for a planner to get time back in their day is by using technology. And I think they say that if you can automate, if you're doing a task more than three times, that it could potentially be automated. So I think planners need to take a step back and see what is extremely repetitive. What can they automate? And I think for maybe the more skilled tasks that are at hand, maybe not outsourcing to like somebody else, but you know, maybe delegating that task to somebody on their team. So you know, then they can have time back to focus on what the goal or what the event is set to achieve.
Laura, just to, sort of as a riposte to that, what about the event organizers who would say, well, yeah, I'm sure that technology could help me, but by the time I've learned how to use a new piece of technology, I could have just done it the way that I've always been doing it.
Well, to that, I would say, sure, there's a learning curve to anything. If that person were to maybe, you know, start a new job somewhere else, there's going to be a learning curve there. There's a learning curve with anything. So I think the quicker that planner is more open-minded and just incorporates that technology into their everyday, the easier it will become to make that technology second nature to them. So then there isn't that learning curve or that sort of delay in having that piece of technology being useful.
And Alison, coming back to you, you mentioned that prior to your role at Hub as a CEO, that you worked as a meeting planner and delivering technology meetings and events. Mm-hmm. Given that you were working in that very subject, did you find that incorporating new elements of technology in the planning side of things did help you?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with Laura. There's always a learning curve, but even a learning curve, take 40 hours of a learning curve to try to figure out a system and get trained on it, and that's on the high end. Think of how much time any given task could take you. Because even though there might be a learning curve, if you start in advance and you take the time to sort of understand the tool sets you're using and train your team on them, that task that you're spending time on could have actually been a 300-hour task, and now maybe you spent 40 hours on learning the system, but now you're saving a bunch of time in sort of the later in planning stages. So for us, even working in technology events early on before, you know, mobile apps were really a big thing or any of the rest of them, I definitely have seen the progression of no technology to technology. And I think meeting planners get buried. If I talk to any meeting planner, it's like my email inbox is like 500 deep and I've got to go through all my emails. So I think a lot of planners end up getting stuck in the spreadsheet and email hell of manually doing that work, and then you're like, oh no, where's that most recent version of the spreadsheet, and then this person edited something but I edited it here, and you end up actually spending more time on redoing work when I think you're not connected with technology. So for meeting planners, I think it's just that first initial hurdle of throwing yourself in there, identifying just maybe one or two tools, and it could be something simple like an online base camp, or you know, you could start very simple with some tools that may help you in project management or getting out from email hell, and then continue to build on that base as you go through your event to continue to use more and more technology to save time.
And it sounds as if what you're both saying is that in the same way that a company would invest financially for a long-term gain, so they would invest a large amount of money at the beginning and seek to sort of pay that back, you know, as a benefit to their company, that people could be investing time early on in a project with the idea that the hours saved whilst delivering that project essentially pays back their investment at the beginning. Is that a fair analogy to what you're saying?
Absolutely.
And I think there's oftentimes additional benefits that come from using technology where, you know, a meeting manager, I always referred to myself as like the mom of the group, because you have to make sure all these different pieces are firing and that everything's going the way it needs to. So you end up interacting not only with your meeting planning team, but also, you know, marketing on the website or through your email campaigns, or, you know, there's a lot of other groups you may implement or integrate with sales on all the new accounts that are coming. So you sort of play that role of sharing information. And so the more you use technology, there's sort of the short-term game of what is your team gaining in terms of time back from the manual tasks, but there's also the value that you start to play in the organization in terms of now marketing has all of their information up to date because you're using technology to be able to push, whether that's, you know, your entire session list, your speaker list onto your website, or if you're integrating with a CRM, being able to then tell your sales team, here's all the accounts that are coming and the value of those accounts. You start to become the person that is giving people the most valuable information that they need in their roles.
Laura, I'm firing this question at you, and it relates to undoubtedly tech making a particular task more straightforward and saving time on a particular task. But when you amplify that by the amount of tasks that an event organizer and a planner has to cover, and they might be using several different types of technology to do that, is there a danger then that they can be cluttered with different services and different technology providers? How streamlined is the whole process becoming where people can use, you know, one or two platforms to be able to deliver a lots of different tasks?
That's a great question. And I would say that if a planner is feeling inundated by technology, it could be due to, you know, that piece of technology, not, there's certain pieces of technology that are not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things where, you know, maybe it does make more sense to, you know, if you only use one piece of technology maybe once or twice a year, do you need to have it around, or does it just make sense to just do it? Yeah, then it makes sense to just, you know, weed out the technology. But I would say that yes, there is a lot of technology that's out there, and I think where the industry is going is the way of integrations. So I think that if there's a planner who's listening to today's podcast and feels that way, that I have a lot of technology on my hands, what's a way that we can either reduce what I'm, you know, what I'm working with here, the pieces of technology, yeah, or ask their technology provider, are there integrations? So a great example is Social Tables has an integration with Salesforce. We use Salesforce as our CRM at Social Tables, and I manage our events program here, trade shows we attend, conferences, and events that we put on as a company. And just like what Allison mentioned, you know, I'm communicating with our sales team through technology of, here are the people who are going to be at this event, here's who you need to follow up with, or here's who you need to get to this event because they're not there, and we're using technology to do that. But it's all because of this integration that we have. So I would say it may feel like you're buried under lots of apps and pieces of technology, but one of the easiest ways to solve that is through integrations. And then also, you know, if something isn't working, just don't feel bad about not using it anymore. If it's not working for you, there might be something else out there that can do it better.
Right.
Allison, do you feel that there's a pressure that's developed on event professionals to utilize technology, and that some of them may be feeling that there's just so much out there that they don't know how to identify which one could work best? Because as Laura just pointed out, people shouldn't be afraid to ditch something if it's not working. That doesn't mean that they don't know how to use it. It could just mean that it's not right for them. How good are we as an industry about encouraging event organizers to explore different options and actually giving them the confidence to ditch it if it's not working for them?
Well, I think throughout the last couple of years, we just have seen an explosion of different technologies come to market. So, you know, when I used to go to trade shows and events or even look online, there was very limited providers that did event technology. So it was sort of like everyone moved from fax machine and mail-in registration to online registration. Then we moved into mobile apps, and everyone became comfortable with mobile apps. And then it was after mobile apps, a couple years after mobile apps, then it really started to come to light that there were a lot of products and tools out there that were focusing on specific problems, like social tables with venue sourcing and seating, like Hub when it came to content management for speakers and abstract management. So now there was a lot of options out there. So I think meeting planners should be encouraged by that because they're not stuck with platforms that they have to use because there's only a few options. Now I think the opposite is true, where there's so many options that it can be hard to sort of narrow them down. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good resources online, including your guys' blog and information. There's trade shows that they can go to, you know, like IBTM has really increased their technology footprint. So I think there's a lot of additional resources out there now where companies can give you a 30-minute demo, sort of show you what it looks like, and then also get you hands-on into the product so you can play around with it before you're purchasing it, so that you have the opportunity, if you're looking for a specific technology tool set, to easily get online, spend, you know, a couple of hours in demos and start playing around with software to figure out which one works best for you.
Agreed. And I would say, and actually a fun little story, you know, we've been planning this podcast for a little while now, and I actually met Allison at Texi Talk, which is, I'm going to give a shout out to Liz King. And, you know, at that event, I mean, there's just tons of folks who are there who, they're colleagues in your space. When you meet them at a networking event, a great way to ask them is, hey, what's a new piece of technology that you just picked up recently, and what do you love, what do you hate? And getting recommendations from your peers is also another easy way to figure out what to test out next and, you know, maybe it's just something new to try.
When this may be a strange question for you, but some of the technology that I've seen, and I'm looking at things like event management platforms, they start by the user having to upload a spreadsheet of information, and they end with you getting a spreadsheet that you can download from the system. So what's the point in having the middleman there? Why don't we just start with the spreadsheet and end with the spreadsheet and, you know, leave out the guy and leave out the uploading and the downloading and the bit in the middle? Where's the benefit to having these systems when it comes to, you know, the technology? Somebody said to me once that the first you know, real example of event technology was when Excel came about and you could actually just on a computer, you know. Have we really advanced that far when we're still having to upload spreadsheets and download spreadsheets at the end? And is there a simpler way to start the process and end the process?
Well, I think there's two pieces of that that come into play. I think every meeting manager is at a different spot in their technology journey and may have either budget limitations or maybe even team limitations to how well the extended team adopts technology. So I look at tool sets to be able to accommodate the specific meeting manager needs. So if it means that, you know, internally you guys put a spreadsheet of sessions together that you want to talk about the event, every tool should have the flexibility that you can import those, because that's some meeting managers, that's maybe where they need to start at first. But then I would also look for tools that have the flexibility of avoiding those spreadsheets at all costs, if you're comfortable with technology and the flow makes sense. But I think the real value comes in that middle part that you were talking about, and it really comes down to the time savings. So, for example, you know, we talked about loading up a session list. Well, if you have 100 speakers after you have that initial session list, you're having to deal with it via email for all those changes. Think about if you're manually changing every spreadsheet, every time a speaker changes their title, their abstract, they got a new certification, they have a new headshot. Think of all that manual work there. So in the case of using Hub, that entire work process is streamlined so that now speakers are making all those changes, so you're not manually having to do it. So while a meeting planner may have opted to not use Hub from start to finish and so they had to upload a document, it still saves them a lot of work in that middle process that's saving them, you know, up to two-thirds of the time that they would have spent on those spreadsheets and emails. So there's definitely still some value there. And it's all about the adoption journey. So, you know, maybe if you do that this year, you're still saving yourself a bunch of time in the middle, but maybe next year you guys will think about automating from the very beginning to avoid those spreadsheets and emails. So I think it's very much about flexibility and tool sets, and then the journey that you go on as a meeting manager for time savings.
And Laura, as I suppose a step forward to that, and I reference Excel as being an early example of event technology, and pretty much everyone to a man will know, you know, how to use that particular platform, if we can call it that still. The younger generation that are coming through and stepping into the events industry for the first time will know how to use a lot of these platforms just instinctively, because they've been surrounded and they've grown up with technology that is instinctive. I mean, how many times do you see an instruction manual for a new piece of technology hardware now? It just comes out of the box and people instinctively know how to use it. Is there a possibility that the older generation of event organizers and people who are more experienced but who perhaps work in a certain set way, by not adopting new processes and new technologies, are missing out on employing and working with younger event organizers because they're not being seen to do things in the modern way?
Yes, I mean, I think an older planner would be remiss if they just write off a younger, maybe newcomer to the events industry as, oh, they're not doing things the, you know, quote unquote right way. So, you know, let's find somebody who does fit our mold. I mean, you could go about it that way, but I think that it needs to be, you know, maybe a 50-foot view to that conversation should be more that the industry should be a little bit more open to starting that dialogue between newer planners and older planners. And what are the hangups? I see a lot of, I'm a part of my local ILEA chapter, and I see and hear a lot of conversations about, well, you know, why should I be using that piece of event technology? We always do paper check-in. Well, I think if somebody just maybe brings it in more of an educational light, that there's going to be a greater understanding between both camps. So I think that, I think an older event planner would just, you know, they're missing out by not hiring somebody who has that technology savviness to them, because they're going to be the future of the industry. So I think that it's also on the older generation to adapt, but same with the younger generation as well.
Alison, what are your thoughts on striking a balance between new technology and old methods of doing things? And the eagle-eyed amongst you watching the video today will spot that there's an old-fashioned calendar and wall planner on the wall behind me with holiday details on for staff members and all sorts of information on there. Now, inevitably, that's reflected on a digital calendar as well, but there is still an argument that older methods of doing things still have a purpose. And do we need to make sure that we are striking a balance between that, or can everything be brought digitally and online and in the cloud?
I would go back to that it's a journey, because I feel like in the next 5 or 10 years, events are going to innovate in how they function and how they work. And so a lot of times when we look at events, I think meeting planners would be at major risk if all of a sudden they were doing everything manually, and then this year they said everything's going digital, every piece, every tool, everything we're doing. It would be, you know, a mess. And so I think going back to that strategic planner versus task manager, I think if you look at it from a strategic viewpoint to say, here's the goals and objectives for our event this year, this is where the pain points are to be able to accomplish those, and how am I going to take the highest value items and solve for those? So maybe it's that you need to drive registration with a new audience, and so you need to make sure that the right content and highlighted speakers are up there. Or maybe it's that, you know, you had so much in overtime last year from tactical planning with your team that your budget got cut, and now, you know, you have a set limit time of these tactical tasks. So I think as you look at the goals and objectives, the strategies to get there, then you can choose what is the highest value technology that might help me solve the biggest pain point. Implement one or two things, find the pros and cons, figure out how those work together, and then start to layer as you think about the planning. So it could be 3 months later, 6 months later, or maybe even the next year's event that you layer things on, because you definitely, I think meeting planners, and I'm saying this because of my past experience, but type A personality like to control everything and make sure that it happens correctly, and there's a risk with technology. So if you are anxious about that journey, start small, start with one or two things, and then continue to chunk them off, because I think where we'll be in 5 years is very, very different from where we are now. So if we start our journey now, we have the opportunity and the space to be able to continue to be agile and really solve for our business needs with technology.
And Laura, coming back to you, looking at this subject of balancing the old and the new, and social tables, I guess it, in some respects, gives a great opportunity to give an example of that, about how there was an old way of doing things and a new way of doing things and how that's improved it. For our listeners and our watchers who are not aware of social tables, tell us a little bit about what it is you guys do and how the technology actually improves the events and the clients that you work with.
So social tables is an event platform that allows planners the ability to source their venue, create a proposal, and then moving into more of the tactical side of events, tactical and operational side, with diagramming, seating, and check-in. So pretty much the, you know, before an event happens to after, to during the event. So, you know, the old way of doing things with events was you did everything with pen and paper. When you source a venue, maybe you would have to Google it, then you would have to call the venue, see if they're available, and then when it, you know, maybe you do book that venue, and then when you plan, you know, the diagram, it's all by paper. There could be changes that happen, and what Allison was mentioning earlier, that, you know, if you're having to redo it often, you know, maybe it's time to look at technology, just so everybody's on the same page. So social tables just provides a streamlined piece of technology to do all that stuff digitally and collaboratively as well.
And I suppose one of the major beauties about doing it this way, and that the vast majority of people will be familiar with, is if you've got five guys with five clipboards and five printouts of the seating plan, and as they're going around a room, they're changing stuff, suddenly you have five different versions of what was originally the same document. Now you replace those clipboards with an iPad or a tablet, and they're all working off the same file. The changes are all being reflected instantly, and I suppose that's a really obvious example of looking at how technology has instantly improved and refined the way of doing something as simple as a seating plan.
Right, exactly. And I'll use a specific example. So there is a rapper named Flo Rida, there was a big music event. We have a big well-known customer of ours, and there was a gala, and he showed up. A, he didn't RSVP, and he showed up unannounced. So, but he showed up with, you know, an entourage of friends, and they had the seating plan, and then the folks who were on site at the event thought to themselves, oh, shoot, what do I, you know, where do I seat him? He's a VIP. And they were able to use the software to quickly find all the open seats on the floor plan and then kind of reshuffle folks, and they were able to communicate that over quickly to the folks doing check-in. So just being able to have the information at your fingertips and have it be the most up-to-date information, I think, is where technology is really benefiting planners, is that sort of that sharing of information.
And Allison, having referenced social tables, I think it's only fair in the interest of parity to come to you and look at specifically what Hub offers and how your own organization is benefiting event managers and what you do to support your clients.
Yeah, and Hub actually was created out of my own pain as a meeting planner. So I like to tell the story of how I was managing an event for a few thousand people, and it was the night before, finally having dinner. I had everything organized, was feeling good for the next day, and around 7 o'clock in the evening, I got a phone call from the business owner who said, oh, by the way, we changed up the entire speaker lineup and all the sessions for tomorrow. I'm going to email you a version of the spreadsheet. I need you to reprint everything and have it ready at 6 a.m. tomorrow. This was before mobile apps. And so I ended up running down, sorting, resorting spreadsheets, making sure all the changes were coming in via email, because of course the one they emailed me, then they had changes beyond that. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm trying to print all these things and all the copiers keep breaking. So now I'm like pulling out the pieces of the machine covered in ink, like trying to get everything done by 6 a.m. And I looked at a colleague of mine and I said, there has to be a better way of doing this, because meeting planners, that's sort of what they live in every day, is this adrenaline rush of having to solve for the impossible. And so that's where Hub was born, and Hub's sole purpose is to help meeting planners to collect, manage, and market all of their event content. So you think of your speakers, your sessions, your sponsors, and even going into your staffers on site and your experts, because a lot of that is the backbone or the meat of events. And the faster we can get to market with the approved content, the faster you can drive registration as well, because Meeting Planners International says that 2/3 of people choose to register and pay for an event based on the content they see. So the faster we can automate that process and be out with the right content and be really highlighting our speakers and our sessions, the faster we can drive registration. So that's why Hub exists, is to help meeting planners automate those processes, and similar to Social Tables and the value that they have of instantly communicating any of the changes in that seating plan, the same goes for Hub with content, of being able to instantly update if you have new speakers or need to remove speakers or have new sessions added. That instantly gets updated across your mobile app or your website, et cetera, so that you're working with the most recent information.
Laura, coming back to you, feedback is vital for technology companies to find out how their clients are utilizing any given platform, how they're getting on with it. What are some of the most frequent comments that you get back from clients about how you could improve what you're doing, things that they would like to see on there in terms of functionality that isn't on there at the moment? Are there some really obvious ones that straight away spring to mind?
Just like you mentioned, usually the number one type of feedback that we get is based on features that people want to see. So it could be an object that they would like in their object library. We also work with a number of rental furniture companies, and sometimes they want to see a certain catalog uploaded to Social Tables. So very often that's what we get feedback on. So when it comes to figuring out what to implement first, we'll try and see what's most popular, what makes most sense for, you know, majority of our customers. So, and then typically we glean that back a number of ways. Customers will just tell us, they'll email us and let us know what that feedback is. And then typically about once a quarter, we will do what is called an NPS, Net Promoter Score survey. And that is a lot of tech companies use it. Allison, you may use it at Hub, but it's a one question, or technically a two question survey, that says how likely are you to recommend this piece of technology to a friend or colleague. They rate it, but usually there's another box for feedback, and that's usually where we see a lot of good feedback. And we also have an early adopters program, so if somebody is open to being a technology guinea pig for us, we will gladly take them and have them be a beta tester or get early access to a feature or a product.
And Allison, same question. You know, what are the common bits of feedback that come from your clients as to how they would see your service adapted or improved?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing in the events industry how many different types of events that there are. And everyone has their own business process, their own way of doing things. So feedback, I think, is vital for any technology platform so that we can continue to improve our services. For us, we do a lot of the same things that Laura was talking about in terms of how we interact with our customers. We also have in-app feedback, so that just means while they're actually using the product, there is ability to give feedback in that moment, because a lot of times when you're doing something and you love it or you hate it, right there in that moment is a great time to give feedback. So we have that available inside of our product so that we're constantly monitoring how it's being used and where there's improvement points. And for us, it's a lot about participating in the industry as well, in terms of both with our agency partners, who they're living and breathing this every day for a wide range of events, but also just going to trade shows and events and talking to planners about where they see the future of technology, where they're seeing value, where they're seeing opportunity. So I think the more we can be together and interfacing with our audience, the better our products can be. Similar to what Laura was talking about, we were at Techsy Talk in New York with Liz King, and that was a great opportunity because it was a lot of just brainstorming and feedback and use cases. So I think the more the event technology world adopts integrating with the planners and receiving the feedback, the stronger the tools can come.
Just a question to you both, and I suppose we'll come back to you first on this, Laura. Do you ever get the opportunity to get hands-on with clients in terms of going out and delivering training and best practice to them? And the reason I ask that is that a lot of these platforms will work superbly only if the initial information that's been input into it into the system has been done correctly and in a certain way and in a certain manner. Do you ever get the chance to actually work in a hands-on level with some of your clients to actually go through some of these best practices and actually develop methods that allow them to then utilize your own platforms in the most efficient manner?
Yes, we actually have an entire customer success department to do that. There are certain companies who are customers of ours where they have an entire planning team that's across, you know, 5 time zones. And there's, you know, 50 plus people, you know, that are using the software. So obviously, you know, we can't, you know, have just one person sent out to do that. So we actually have a number of things. So not only do customers get a customer success manager who is their go-to point person for any questions that they have during their time of using social tables, but we also have live daily training sessions for any time zone that you're in, 5 days a week. So if you have something specific that you want to get training on, so say you've been using social tables for 2-3 years and you want like the leveled up training, there is a training for that. So we have that. We have a ton of online resources, videos, and then, you know, customers are always welcome to reach out actively. You know, oftentimes we'll get somebody on Twitter who says, hey, how do I do this? And so it's, you know, there's lots of ways to communicate with us, but I would say number one is our customer success team.
And Alison, similarly, did you get the opportunity to go hands-on and actually look at the way people are implementing their procedures at sort of ground zero?
Yeah, similar to social tables, our customer success team typically is the one interfacing, but I also love getting hands-on with the product. So I serve on a couple of committees. So the Corporate Event Marketers Association is one of the committees that I serve on with their content team. So as we were going through the call for content process and the grading and deciding all the content, I actually facilitated all of that with our product. So it's really fun to be able to get in and see those use cases and then also be that best practice advisor for all of our future customers. So similar to social tables, we have blogs, we have online trainings, we have online resources. But I think with my background of being in events, that's one of the places that I love the most is when I'm able to talk with our customers and help to understand their business need and help advise them on how to use technology the best. And then being able to share that information across our entire customer base as well so they get the best use out of their technology.
Unfortunately, we're running towards the end of today's episode, but before I wrap things up and thank our guests, what we should both do is very, very quickly, ladies, if you could give us the ways in which people can find out more about your own services. Laura, if people want to look into social tables, how can they get in contact with you?
So they can head directly to our website. That's just socialtables.com. We are on social media. We are at social tables pretty much everywhere. And also, if you want some resources, and they're not even social table specific, it's just industry education, they can head to our blog, which is socialtables.com/blog. And if you actually want to get in touch with me, I am at laurael@socialtables.com.
Fantastic. And Alison, if people want to find out more about Hub, give us the ways that they can do that.
Yeah, sure. So our website is hub.me. So hub has two B's, so hubb.me. And similarly, we have a blog on there, so just hub.me WAC blog. And we're also on all of social media as well. So hub.me spelled out, so hubb.me. And if people want to get a hold of me, I'm always happy to chat around the industry and about technology. My email is Allie, A-L-L-I-E, at hub.me.
Fantastic. Laura Lopez is the Senior Community Manager for Social Tables, and Alison Megyar is the CEO of Hub. Thank you to you both for joining the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
The Event Industry News podcast is sponsored by Visit by GES, our smart event solution partner. For more information on Visit by GES and its smart event solutions, you can head over and visit visit.ges.com. Lots and lots of visits in that. A very good morning, afternoon, and evening to wherever anybody has tuned in or listened to today's podcast from. Don't forget to stay up to date with all of the latest content from eventindustrynews.com by downloading the Event Industry News app, available for all the major mobile devices. And you can get your opinions to us and any comments on today's podcast as well via Twitter using @EventNewsBlog. There is everything for today's episode. Once again, a thank you very much to our guests. And if I can remember correctly, Alison's in Portland, Oregon. Laura, you're in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much to you both for taking the time out of your no doubt busy days to join us. This has been the Event Industry News podcast, and we'll see you again on the next episode. Thank you very much. Goodbye.